Kia ora and welcome to Beyond Consultation, a podcast that will help you in your public or community sector work to increase your impact by doing more than just ticking the box of consultation. I'm Paul McGregor from Business Lab, and we're interested in the mindsets and methods of people who are making a bigger impact by working collaboratively with communities, industries, and other organizations. Ngā mihi mō te whakaroa. Kia ora and welcome to episode 54, which is a bit of a follow-on from number 51, where John Tamihere Kemis and I caught up to talk all things transformation from a te ao Māori point of view. And I know that word, transformation, it's a big word. Is it a buzzword? Is it jargon? Probably. Does that mean it's a useless word that we should never use? Well, I don't think so. And I find myself talking about transformation a lot when I'm with Māori colleagues. And I think because from their perspective, so many of the current ways of doing and being are not serving them and their whānau. So of course we need to transform. And it's not enough to just engage. It's not enough for iwi Māori to advise. It's not enough for government to consult. If nothing actually changes as a result of any of that, well, what was the point? So when people are talking about transformation, I am hearing a genuine desire and need for change. But of course, at the same time, I'm sure you can yourself point to transformation programs that just don't transform how a system works. And my take on that is that it's because we pay attention to only some of the interconnected elements that influence change. We pay attention to policies, you know, a lot of work on legislative frameworks or strategic frameworks. We spend a lot of time on practice, how people are doing things. So we invest in training and professional development. We pay a lot of attention to resource flows. So people look at, well, where is budget? Who's making the decisions and where? But what often gets ignored or forgotten about is relationships, power dynamics, and mental models. That is, how are people connected? And what do they intuitively think, feel, and believe? Anyway, this is meant to be an introduction to this cheeky little bonus episode with JT. We spoke for about 90 minutes and we managed to cut that down to 50 odd minutes in the full episode. So in this one, we've included some of the content from the end of our conversation when we just started to have a bit of fun. There were chats about transformation, about relationships-led change, about legacies, about beards, and an invitation from me on what I would love you as a listener to do after those episodes that really inspire you. Today's shout out is to Jenny Cochrane, who's part of our Reframe program, and she said about episode 51 with JT that this episode spoke to me a lot as we're embarking on an organizational review. There was a lot of gold for me in here as I advise on how we should tackle it and think about how to make it effective and inclusive. So here we are with some more gold. Please welcome back to the podcast, John Tamihere Kemis.
Te Uringi is the large steering pedal of a waka hurua, a seagoing waka, that would keep it straight. Because as you navigate transformation, and you'll know this as much as anyone, Paul, I welcome your own thoughts on it, those seas aren't calm. So if everyone's paddling, but the waves are pushing you left and right, who's holding the waka straight? And often that needs to be someone outside of the organization. And it's actually really useful if it is someone outside the organization, because they're not mired by complacency.
Yeah.
And they can get to the heart of the matter.
Your
thoughts here, Paul?
I could echo everything that you've said. And for me, I'm worried if we aren't having conversations that are tense, because that tells me we haven't got to the real issue yet. We haven't got to the real heart of things that we need to be talking about.
To be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Especially when you begin a transformation. Because in order to transform, there has to be an intent that something needs to change. Now, often that something needs to change can be driven by, oh, this program that we're running isn't working and we don't know why. So something intrinsically needs to change. And I've been on a few journeys, especially with some Maori organizations, where the change actually was needed at the very top. But we only discovered that by being able to come in externally and look at the playing field. And then, because you approach it in that manaho tutanga way, and you approach it in that way where there is that respect and reciprocity, you're able to spell that out, but not in a, you have failed.
This is what we've noticed.
Stronger guidance here. Right? And again, if everything approaches from a position of respect, like there is a reason why many of the Asian societies are becoming economic powerhouses. It's because one, business deals are founded on relationships. And no matter who's doing a deal or what technology you're using, human beings are involved. And we're a naturally interdependent species. So if we are building our building blocks of our businesses and our connections and our communities are built on strong relationships, then that's a stunning foundation. And the beauty about great relationships is they give you legacy. They give you absolute legacy. So you can leave that and that relationship will be there. And then the next people that come to pick that up can either foster or disintegrate it. Right? It depends entirely on what happens. But that legacy is there. And again, who I am now is a representation of all those that have come before. And the legacy and the relationships and whatever that they built are part of the reason I can have the connections that I do now. So that's a very real thing.
And it's the same in our organizations as well. We look back at who is the whakapapa of the people in our organization who have helped us to get to where we are. And I've noticed those organizations that have a real connection with that, there's the sort of a heart of the organization that lives on even when the people have moved on. Whereas I think this is one of the things that's challenging for our public service in particular, is that connection can often get lost and turnover can be really high in the public sector, which makes it hard to know who we are as a collective.
Yeah, if I take it in a Te Ao Māori context, right? Every time an iwi went to war, they were going to lose half their soldiers, right? But because of the attention to detail, because of strong community connections and relationships that each iwi built, they were able to replenish their reserves, and they were able to replenish them with a group of people that had been trained in their ways. So yes, these things would always occur, but there was always the ability, because that legacy of knowledge, that legacy of information, and that clear understanding of who they are and why they're at war was there. If you had poor leadership and a lack of strong guidance for the next generation, you fell apart. There's a reason a lot of iwi, you know, have got very, very small numbers across Aotearoa now. It's because they're just, you know, through poor coordination, management, bad relationships, terrible intermarriages, whatever, their numbers have dwindled, right? And that's a very real thing, not just for Māori, but for any business, any society. If it's not being nurtured, cared for, if people aren't behaving with respect within those, and there isn't that cycle and circle of reciprocity, then you're going to wind up having no friends and no whānau to call on. And that's just the way it is. But as I was saying before, when you look at especially those Asian economic powerhouses at the moment, they're really strong in relationships. But they're very, very strong in a respectful way of doing business, even if they don't like each other, because they operate on a level of respect. And I've seen this firsthand with some of the organizations that I've been connected to over the years in Asia, is that when you look at the way that they approach a business relationship, it's respectful with their competitors, with their enemies, with whatever. It's respectful. You know, behind the back rooms, there could be all sorts of stuff going on. But the key thing is that they're respectful. And as a result, you know, they get some genuine benefit from each other. And that's something I think a lot of New Zealand organizations could learn. We're built here, especially in the public sector, we're built on a very competitive framework. Right? We don't foster collaboration. And we know that. Like our own government championed a few years ago, you know, the fact that IRD and DIA were working together on a big, you know, digital transformation project. Why was that news? Right? That was my question at the time. Why is that news? Shouldn't we be behaving like that? If our goal is to act in the best interest of New Zealand society, shouldn't we be collaborating on things that, that matter and that are of real importance?
Yeah.
Why is that news? Why was that held up as this wonderful example? I think intrinsically you look down that we deliberately structure things so they become a bit competitive.
One of my first projects, JT, was looking at privacy and information law with the Ministry of Justice. And I remember one of the things that stood out for me was there's this research done on public perceptions. And the public perception was that government is one organization. And of course, government agencies share information with everyone. So why, therefore, do you keep asking for my permission to share it with government agencies? So members of the public couldn't figure that out. But when you're in government, suddenly it looks quite and feels quite different. Is there anything else you want to share with people listening?
No, what do you want to know? What are you thinking? Throw me a curly one.
Oh, throw you a curly one.
God, you like to ask dumb questions. Ask me a dumb question.
Why do you have a beard, JT?
Why? Because my face is oval. And and I took advice once from a hairdresser, whatever, and they were like going, every time you come in here with like facial hair, because I'll give you a good example. A really good way of knowing that I've been really, really busy is this. Okay. So for listeners, they can't see it, but in true inclusiveness, I'm going to give you an audio description. So JT normally has tightly cropped hair because my mother blessed me with incredibly fine, relatively lifeless hair. That's what I got in history, right? I didn't get the thick mat. So one of the things is it grows really well and it grows a little too much when I'm busy and I haven't had time to get to a hairdresser. So right now it looks a little bit longer and definitely, it's a little bit more there, right? I could probably pass for a disco dancer.
I think it's more of the pasta look actually, but yeah.
Oh yeah, thanks. My facial hair, of course, sometimes when I get a little teeny and busy, I don't have time to shave much or I completely forget about it and I just let it grow. And a few times I'd gone in because I used to like being clean shaven and they came in, they said, you got quite heavy eyebrows and you got quite lightish kind of, you know, as far as the weight of my hair is quite light. And I was like, oh, okay. They go, yeah, it's really good when it balances out your chin. And so there you go. That's why I have facial hair. And it's really weird. I really like it. And it's bizarre. I feel naked when it's not there.
You've been stroking it like a Japanese sensei throughout.
Like Miyamoto Musashi. Yeah. I'm channeling the strategic leader by stroking my beard. In fact, I've just won 3 wars and have decided what the next move is for my dynasty by purely stroking my chin.
Oh, brilliant. Was that question dumb enough for you, JT?
That was awesome. I love it. All right, here's my question for you.
Okay.
Why do you do these podcasts and what value do you think they bring to your audience?
Well, I do them for lots of different reasons. And I do them because I enjoy them and I love connecting with people like you and getting to ask questions that I'm grappling with myself. So there's a personal benefit to me there. It's like it's a crash course or a self-directed learning experience. So there's that. And then I do them for the stories that I hear from people who listen, who every so often people will get in touch and they'll say, oh, I had this crap day at work. And then I listened to this podcast with such and such. And it reminded me of why I do the work that I do. So that's the other aspect, is I see people out there who are lonely, trying to change things, and they're frustrated or they're overwhelmed and feeling like they're not making progress and that there's nobody who thinks the same way that they do. And so then I hear them and the stories they tell after they've listened to these, going, oh, I'm not alone, and there is hope and positivity out there for me to go with. So that, I guess that's why I do it. Yeah, and what do I hope people get out of it? One thing I will say here is I was the guest on a podcast a year or two ago, and one of the loveliest things that happened after it was a bunch of people got in touch with me as the guest to say, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I really liked blah, 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 and I'm going to go check out something that you mentioned. So one thing that I hope is actually for you as a guest that people get in touch with you afterwards and say thank you or let you know what it's mean to you, because yeah, it's about that connection as well. I mean, I live in Nelson and I can't go to conferences in Auckland and Wellington and Christchurch. So the podcast is a little bit of a way of connecting up different people who otherwise might not have a conversation together.
Like I love that a lot. And like you were saying, that shared perspective thing, right? So a lot of my approach is built on Māori values and it's sort of intrinsic to just how I behave.
Mm.
But in saying that, every one of those values is fully applicable in any context. And when you and I first started having a kōrero around strategy and transformation, I might have had the te reo Māori words and the vernacular and some of the examples that relate to that perspective.
Mm.
But what you were saying, especially we're talking about business labs approach.
Mm.
To
that's the same and with different words.
On that journey, mm. The context was exactly the same. So, so you know, for me, I found that your sharing of your own aroha perspective, you know, JT hashtag aroha, was just awesome. And like you say, when you hear many of your own thoughts reflected back in another human, that's a beautiful thing, right?
Mm. And it gives people different language. Sometimes you're searching for a way to explain something and then you hear someone else distill it down to this sentence and you just go, ah, that's how I can communicate that point. Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions I get a lot is they go, oh, how many Māori organizations do you manage or run? And I'm like, none. So the organizations that I've been involved with have not been Māori, but I've got a really simple philosophy to the way that I work, which is I really want to bring my full self and the bicultural human in me is one element of that self.
Mm.
And there's a former board director who I love and adore, who I worked with, and they said a little phrase about me that I've held on to ever since, which is they said, you know, JT, you have an organized mind and a creative heart, and that's rare, don't lose it. And I've always sort of loved that phrase, right? Because often, you know, people say, oh, you're really organized and logical. And other people go, oh, you're quite creative and outside the box. And it's like, hey, I'm both. So, but again, I link it all back, hey, like part of the reason why I could be that way is because I learned to pay attention to the essence of something. What's at the heart of this, right? And part of our role as, you know, advisors, consultants, supporters, sideline supporters, whatever, is to understand what's at the heart of something and then keep it beating.
Hmm.
Right. And that's awesome. Like that's one of the things that I love about the things that I do, you know. Why did I step into a GM role with a not for profit that focuses on the creative and disability sector? It's because it was an opportunity to bring my full self.
Hmm.
Arts lover, strategist, relationship builder, kind of the whole piece. So for me, it's a beautiful thing. But I love the touch points that I have, and a lot of them make me who I am. So again, I am that summation of all that's come before and what's influenced me today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Beyond Consultation podcast. What did you learn from the show? What should we have talked about? Who else should I interview? I would love to hear your feedback. And if you want to learn more about what you heard today, everything from the show is at www.businesslab.co.nz/podcast. If this episode has left you with a burning question, please feel free to submit a voice message through the link on our podcast page. We can then ask that question of a guest in a future episode. Or tag me in a post on LinkedIn or Facebook and I can point you in the right direction. If you want to know when we release new episodes, make it easier for yourself and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Again, thank you for listening. Ngā mihi mō te whakarongo.